Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, February 24th, 2011. A lot of material to cover tonight. Many topics, the two main science topics, one dealing with the pollution associated with alternative energy. A lot of people don't realize that when you see that wind tower sitting on a hillside, some people think it destroys the view. Other people see green energy. And I talked in past weeks about the fact that the wind towers really don't produce much energy at all. They sit there, the blades sit there, maybe spin a little bit. But unless they're spinning to where you can hardly see the blades, they're running at a terribly low efficiency rate. The wind is just blowing right through them. So anyway, that's another issue, but there's an entire issue behind the pollution that occurs in building the equipment in that tower. For example, when I was the main guest on Coast to Coast AM February 16th, that was a Wednesday, a week and one day ago. And I talked about the illusion, the myth of alternative energy was the topic of the show. And then I also talked about that on my radio show last week as a main science topic. Okay, but the other issue is that, take for example, what I was going to say about the Coast to Coast show is the day afterwards, articles popped up all over the world talking about other problems with specifically wind power. And one of them talked about the political, behind the scenes movements where big corporations get involved with government and using the green movement to promote. Now, a long time ago I said watch and see that the big corporations will jump on the green movement. It will be used for advertising, promoting, and including big companies grabbing major contracts and using governments to enforce their ability to take over land, to run, in this case, through Texas, through the ranches of Texas, to use eminent domain to run power lines. Now, people can get sick from power lines running near their houses. And so people protested not only because of the visual aspect, because of the health aspect. The governments are not doing the appropriate health studies, and they're forcing these major power lines, high voltage power lines, through ranches in Texas. So at any rate, not good for the people. That's one of the issues. And then another one is these are the high power lines run from the wind farms that are in Texas, and these are all being installed as we speak. But then the unhidden problem is that these wind farms are not going to really produce that much energy. But companies will make huge amounts of money installing them. Note also that companies are not required to take any of this equipment down. All over the world, I understand there's an installation in California with 14,000 wind towers that is defunct. It no longer works, and it's just sitting there rusting and rotting in the hillsides up in the mountains of California. And the companies that install these are not required to take them down. They've got their profits, they ran, and now this huge eyesore, there are other installations I've seen personally where you have sometimes as few as a dozen wind towers, but they're sitting there, some have been there for 10, 15 years, and they're sitting there with the propellers falling off and the rust, the equipment is open up, their birds are living in them. These were not maintained, and no one ever was required to take this equipment down. It's not in any of the contracts. So, major problems. Another article that came out talked about vast pollution in China. Okay, now rare earth elements are used in the magnets in the wind power system to generate electricity. Electrical generators use magnets. So where are these magnets made? Well, the metals that come, the niobium is a rare earth element, and it comes mainly from a single area in Mongolia, in China. And in this area, they mine vast amounts of dirt, and rock, and they break it down, and then they have to separate out the niobium, which is an element, and that then is made into ingots and sold into the there's about 2 tons of niobium used in every magnet in these big wind towers. Well, that has its price too, as they're destroying vast land areas in China. The extraction process uses sulfuric acid, other types of acids, to leach the metal out of this dirt. And then the waste product from that that mining process gets dumped into a lake. Right now there's a lake 6 miles wide in China, and it's full of acid and acid residue. Let's put it that way. The people in that area are dying, and the people are made to work in this plant with very little health precautions. And also the farmers' crops are being ruined. They can no longer grow crops in this area because of the acidity of the area. And of course in China, that doesn't matter. They've got so much land and so many people, they just look at that as, well, that's the price of having modern technology. So there was one article that said the entrance to this one plant over there has a picture of the green pastures with sheep herding in England, with the wind towers there using the niobium from their manufacturing plant. But then you look at, this is on the billboard outside the plant, but when you look at the area around the plant, it looks like the moon. Everything is dead. Nothing grows there. The people are completely, their life system has been destroyed. So anyway, these are the costs behind, the secret costs behind wind power and green energy. Okay, so anyway, those. Then I'll also talk about education. Of course, Wisconsin, now Indiana, New York, California, all bankrupt in the real sense, but states like Wisconsin, Indiana, and New York, all on the verge of declaring bankruptcy, which would, and then the entire problem of education. I do a lot of education on this show. My books, there are a lot of parents who have their kids studying my books for education because the science that is presented in schools is simply wrong. It's simply incorrect. You have NASA with hired people going out there, what they call their outreach program, pretending that they have correct science. And so is it any wonder that the United States is falling far behind? But in addition to that, there are just major problems with education. The unions, there are good and bad sides to the unions. They help protect the workers. But on the other side, they create a monopoly in which progress and success is not required. So at any rate, there's a real dilemma in education, and the people who are the losers are the public. They pay a great price for very poor education. So at any rate, I'll talk a bit about that. It's a very controversial topic, depending on whether you're on the teacher side or whether you're on the consumer side, the parent side. But the situation, the end result, is it is very bad. Overall, the United States, one of the statistics that a third of fourth graders are not at the basic reading level. That means they can't read a sentence and tell you what it said. Just basic. They are not at the basic. One third of U.S. students are not at that level. And that's a minimal level. That's a level that would allow you to read a form and fill it out. So at any rate, on to, I just want, okay, let me make a few quick announcements before going into the show. I was a guest this past week, Sunday, on the John Moore Show. I've been there many times. It had been a while since I've been there. And John and I had been trying to get a date where he would interview me on the new book, The Diamond Principle. So we finally did that interview. We talked about other topics also. And some listeners called in with some questions. So I suspect that John and I will have another show one of these days to discuss more of the Diamond Principle, but it was a way to get the topic out to the public. We did discuss the Diamond Principle, But there are so many topics that are relevant today on people's minds. Okay, then I was also the last Friday a guest on Pastor Peter Peters' program. We talked about the announcements that came out regarding the alleged discovery of a Planet X, major Planet X object, four times the size of Jupiter, that has not been discovered, but astronomers think that NASA is going to discover this within the next 2 years, and it will cause a lot of comets to come into the solar system. And I talked about the clear message that was sent to the public, and it was done on the same day, February 14th, the release of that story. I talked about this in my show last week, but I talked on Peter's show, we talked about the fact that how disinformation is built and the intricacies of releasing that story along with the Stardust spacecraft passing Comet Temple 1 on February 14th, Valentine's Day of 2011 this year. So how important it is for these stories to be coordinated in the news and then blanket coverage, no matter where you go, whether you go to the evening news, the newspaper, the internet, CNN, MSNBC, all of the standard news outlets, you're going to get that story, and it leaves some very big impressions in people's minds. And one of the biggest strange things was when they announced this in England, it was a so-called discovery by U.S. scientists. And by the way, this is not a new discovery or anything. This is just a rehash of an old story, Standard Science talking about Nibiru. These scientists have renamed it to be Tyche just so they're not associated with the old Nibiru story. But it gives NASA a cover story when a lot of comets start coming into the solar system. And I made the comment, too, that they wouldn't do this if something were not about to happen. They wouldn't do this if they were expecting in the next couple years, because people would forget by then. The memory of the public is not very long. So why would they release this in February? Well, in June is the month when the southern part of the sky is most visible from the southern big telescopes that have been installed, like in southern Latin America and at the South Pole. That's when those telescope facilities swing into action. In the winter months, when the northern hemisphere is in winter, those telescopes are in the eternal daytime, so they're of no use at all. They're only of use for a short period of time revolving around June, and that's when that visibility of that southern part of the sky is most visible from that area. And that's where, for a long time, based on the work of Harrington, who was the principal, he was the head of the Naval Observatory back in the 1980s under a contract from NASA to search for Planet X. That's where he concentrated his studies because of gravitational effects of the planets Neptune and Uranus. So a very complex topic, but why would they put this announcement out there that a major planet would be found by NASA? But remember, it's way out there. It wouldn't bother us. It just sends a few comets into the solar system. What a cover story. So I'm expecting something soon to break on that story, because NASA and the misinformation crew are already building their cover story. Okay, so anyway, that's the topic, and how disinformation works. That was the topic of when I was on with Pastor Peters last week. And by the way, these are people, John Moore, Pastor Peters, coming from this topic from very different points of view, but all coming to the same conclusion, basically, that misinformation is rampant and the public has to be educated on how to read through the lines. That's the basic issue. When announcements come out, they're planned. There's a rhyme and a reason to them. And so therefore, the public has to learn how to read through the lines. A huge earthquake, 6.3 in Christchurch, New Zealand this past week. 65 people that was the initial death toll. I'm not sure what it is at this point, but a tremendous amount of damage. also a lot more indication that New Zealand's sitting on a major rift zone under the earth. I understand that earthquake was about 4 kilometers under the ground, typically where they are, in relatively close to the city. So it did a major amount of destruction in the city, and when these earthquakes occur, a lot of times they occur in groupings, not just one at a time. The earth is adjusting. Why are there earthquakes? I've often said that earthquakes on earth would not be an issue at all if earth were 4.5 billion years old, like scientists claim. Standard science claims that the earth is 4.5 billion years old and nothing has happened since. If that were the case, the earth would be just a big dry ball of matter and would be very static. Things would be settled in place, but within the last 10,000 years, earth has been wrenched a number of times by passing celestial objects, and that causes the plates to move, to shift, and now they are just relaxing, trying to adjust, trying to get back into equilibrium. And that's why we have a lot of volcanoes along these zones, a lot of earthquake activity, Christchurch being New Zealand itself being on a major fault zone. And of course, a lot of the islands of the world, if you look at the islands of the world, many of them reside in fault zones or other types of geological situations where there are earthquakes. Puerto Rico, the Hawaiian Islands, all through the South Pacific, all the way over to the Philippines, into Indonesia, Melanesia, up through into South China, all earthquake zones, up around Japan, a big island in the middle of earthquake zones. So at any rate, these kind of things will continue. Let me see what other notes. Let me just make this. I was going to talk about education as a topic in itself, but just this note on Wisconsin, the situation there. Indiana now following suit, trying to break the unions. New York already well aware of the fact that it cannot pay the state teachers, especially retirement, these kind of issues. There has never been any planning, real planning, on these issues of how to fund this. It was always a year by year. Okay, here's how much money we need this year. Never realizing or trying to take the head in the sand approach that someday a lot of these teachers, many who are in what you would call the baby boomers, which are just starting to retire, a lot of those people are going to retire. How are you going to pay the retirement accounts for these? And then, of course, they've invested in what is basically the stock market for 401ks and teachers' unions, retirement funds, etc., have invested in the stock market, and the money simply has never been there. It's always been a Ponzi scheme, and it cannot pay. There's no big box of money in the bottom of corporations. There's no big box of money in the basement of banks. There's no big box of money anywhere. It's all phony money, and the 401k program itself was a Ponzi scheme. The only thing it did is it drove money into the stock market to artificially inflate the stock market, and it was never meant to be a savings program. The stock market was always meant to be an investment vehicle where you were paid dividends and not to withdraw the principal. So now you have the baby boomers poised on the point of retirement, about ready to withdraw the principal of their so-called investment, and simply the money is not there. The matching part of the 401k program is just a paper investment only. There was never any money there in the first place. So it's just a number on paper. So when the companies send out, and this happens regularly, when the companies send out a statement saying this is how much money they have, there's not some big magical box there where that money is sitting. It's simply not true. And so the money is somehow invested or in other places, and that's how much money is there based on investment, not on reality. If you have to understand the difference. So many retirement accounts really don't have any money in them at all, even though they'll send you a nice statement every year claiming they do. So these states are finally hitting the wall in the retirement and the amount of money being put into education. Understand that in the average state in the United States, 50%, approximately 50% of the state budget is education. In Minnesota, for example, the average number of lobbyists at the state capitol is a couple of some of the big corporations, like in Minnesota, 3M, Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing. A lot of people don't know what that 3M stands for. When you buy a soap product or a cleaning product or scotch tape or magnetic tape for a computer system or all the other applications that have been 3M just covers the spectrum, Stickum notes, you name it, it's made by 3M. But they have lobbyists at the state capitol, of course, but they have a couple. The state teachers union in Minnesota has 67 full-time lobbyists at the state capitol. That's almost the same number of representatives as the state has in the state's legislature. It's amazing the amount of money put into the unions, the teachers' unions. It's a very powerful, extremely powerful presence in the states. But the basic problem is the states can no longer afford it. I remember when I was a kid, the plumbers' union, if you were a plumber's kid, they were rich. They made a lot of money. And all the houses had plumbing that was the old-style metal plumbing. And if you had a problem with your plumbing, you needed a plumber to come over and fix the problem. And so the plumbers just had it free rein. All of a sudden, a couple things happened at the same time. The plastic plumbing came in place. Now you could go down to the hardware store, buy some plastic plumbing, and fix your own plumbing problem. And also they became overpriced. They just were outrageously expensive. All of a sudden, overnight, the plumbers went out of business. And now, all of a sudden, they couldn't find work. The plastic plumbing came in place, the houses. And so these guys that knew the old-school plumbing were simply not required anymore. And overnight, they became paupers, whereas they had complete dominant reign. And there was nothing that the plumbers' union could do about it. They had overpriced themselves. I talked a couple weeks ago about unions. A lot of times, they're for the benefit of the worker, but there was a case in some of the tropical islands, in the Hawaiian Islands, used to be a big operation for pineapples. Now you can hardly find a pineapple that's grown in the Hawaiian Islands. All of those operations have moved into South America, where the labor is cheap. There are no unions, there are no requirements. But what happened in the Hawaiian Islands is the unions came in, tried to get worker compensation up, and finally they broke the companies to where the companies realized it's cheaper to ship from South America. We'll just buy a big boat and move this product from South America and reduce our overall costs. And so that's what happened, and it left the local people in Hawaii with no jobs at all. So there's a balance that has to occur between unions and the local economy, and of course our local economy is in the dirt right now, which is an artificial process also. A real economy should not have swings up and down. But at any rate, the bottom line is, whether you're for unions, against them, or unions do good things, but they also have another side to them. And it simply depends on your point of view. Some people believe that unions are the answer to everything. But also in the auto industry, they have overpriced to where they cannot compete with foreign markets. And a lot of the foreign markets subsidize their industries from the government. So it's amazing the economics at play in what we call capitalism today. But the bottom line in Wisconsin, Indiana, New York is these states are bankrupt. they're not able to pay the bill, and so the teachers can demand, they can strike, they can do all they want, but the money simply is not there. So anyway, that is an ongoing issue. Simply a part, but it brings to light the dilemma in education. It brings it to a much brighter light on the fact that students are not being educated. Okay. Just a quick notice, a lot of new listeners to this show and other alternative radio. Can you imagine the people that have been listening to my show for a long time, years and years, a decade on this show and longer, and listening to me on the radio when I was guest back through the 90s or something like that, discussing my science work, my science gives an alternative explanation for what's going on in the solar system. Can you imagine someone coming online in 2011, February, right now, and waking up to the fact that, gee, something just isn't right out here. And they had been fooled all these years into imagining that the government was honest and everything worked the way it was supposed to work and economics was really the way it should be, and when NASA said something, it was golden. Can you imagine all those people coming online right now and waking up to the fact that all of this is a big smokescreen? And that none of it is true, and that they have been fooled all these years, and what am I going to do right now? Can you imagine the state of those people? And then, besides that, all of the misinformation that's online and on the news, so those people are going to go out and start searching for answers, and wow, are they in for a big surprise. They're going to have more information thrown at them than misinformation coming from well-planted sources, and they're going to go out there and try and read this and make sense out of it. Oh, unbelievable. The maze that is out there to wade through to try and really understand what is going on today. Okay, so I'm going to dash into the topics. First of all, I like to always include listeners. I don't do it enough. But this email was so important and it just raised such an important topic. And then they asked a question. These people live in South Carolina. I'll just read the email that came in. It says, subject, Gulf oil and chemical dispersant problems. Okay. It says, Jim, we respect your opinion and have followed your show. Plus, we have all your books, water filters, and food. We are retired seniors and are considering moving to a better area. We live in South Carolina with a big organic garden with well water, city water for the house, and solar battery backup system that will allow us to run our well. We had an acid rain in late July that destroyed our garden. Also, when the wind is from the southwest, which for them would imply coming from the Gulf of Mexico, when the wind is from the southwest, we still have varying levels of respiratory problems that started after the Gulf spill. When the wind is from other directions, we're okay. We believe they, in quotes, are still doing something in the Gulf. And then there's an article attached that they refer to. Then they say, we would like your thoughts on the timeline for the resolution of the Gulf problem and whether this would be a safe area to stay in, meaning to stay in South Carolina. Or should we move? We have considered eastern Colorado, but they have water problems. We are considering central Indiana because of good gardens and water. We believe that the extra distance from the Gulf will help. Are there any sources to see how the chemicals will disperse with distance from the source? Then they say thank you. And then they have articles that show that the dispersants in the Gulf of Mexico are still being sprayed on a daily basis. And they refer to certain articles. Here's one. They're still being sprayed in the Gulf of Mexico. They have photos of this sludge. It's kind of a white, pinkish, bubbly sludge that is coming in on people's shorelines in the Gulf of Mexico. Okay, here I'll just read what it says next to the pictures. I won't mention names. Here's foam on the beach near Pass Christian, Mississippi, December 29th, and it's a big, this looks like, like I say, this pink, brownish foam that's coming out of the ocean up onto the shorelines. And the people believe this is oil and dispersant. According to the official account of oil spill response, about 1.8 million gallons of dispersant were applied to break up the oil slick. About two-thirds sprayed from the surface by boats and planes, and the rest injected near the broken wellhead at about a mile beneath the surface. Okay, then here's another picture. It says sand on a beach in Pass Christian, Mississippi. The red gunk resembles oil dispersed, according to the photographer, etc. These people did not buy the Joint Command's insistence that the use of dispersants has halted, and is not alone in her belief that nighttime air traffic over the Gulf is due to dispersant spraying by C-130 aircraft, which also were used during the initial response. The air traffic is consistent. Spotter planes go out during the day, write down where the problem spots are. Then you can sit on the beach at night and watch the C-130s going back and forth out over the Gulf of Mexico. They are trying to take this to laboratories to see if this, in fact, is the chemical dispersant with oil, with the samples they have from the beach. So, anyway, let me quick. This is a topic that's packed with misinformation, with the government doing things. Okay, the situation, as I understand it, on the Gulf of Mexico, it has never been capped. It is still flowing. It will flow for years, decades, 100 years possibly. They are still pumping dispersement, is my understanding, into the ocean to try and get most of the oil from ever coming to the surface, because if they do that, then it is not considered pollution. It's out of sight, out of mind. So these other, like she says, problem spots, or he, I'm not sure who's writing that part, the problem spots are being attacked from the air with dispersant, and that's what these people are seeing washing up on the shore. So this problem is still going on. The acid rain that destroyed their garden in July, this is a serious problem, because we have a vast food belt all through Florida. Florida raises a tremendous amount of food, as do all those southeastern states. Tremendous amounts of farming going on down there. A tremendous food basket, but this it's hard to predict, because this all began in midsummer last summer. I remember seeing the spots on leaves, and what happens is the rain comes in, it rains, and of course rains the acid out of the air. That one of the unspoken side effects, people always think of the oil being a pollutant in the water. But along with the gas coming out, these are deep wells, and so they come up with a lot of volcanic poisonous gases. And so it's literally killing everything down in the southeastern United States. A lot of the people are poor, they cannot move, there's a lot of sickness. This is going unreported, it's being unreported by the government and by the news. My understanding is, yes, this will continue, and there's no solution in sight. There is a way to, and there always was a way, to cap the oil well in the Gulf of Mexico. You put a big, very massive inverted funnel, just like the funnel you buy at the hardware store. You make a great big one and let it sit on the floor of the ocean. Then you attach a tube to that, and then have ships ready at the top to accept the oil as it comes out of that tube. The reason it is not being done is very clear, that they would have boats being filled up on a daily basis, and they would have to take that someplace to process the oil. The processing facilities in the Gulf of Mexico could not handle this extra deposit of oil. And also, the biggest thing for the oil companies is it would show that oil is extremely available. There is so much oil in just this one deposit. The only way the oil companies can maintain their profits and record costs of oil as they charge to the public is to keep this facade of we're running out of oil. There's a limited amount of oil. So that's the only way they could possibly keep. If boats were being filled up on a daily basis there with basically free oil, why don't we kick BP out of the Gulf of Mexico and just take the oil and use it? And it would become very apparent. So there is a way to harvest that oil, to use it, but the companies won't do it because it would become very apparent that there's vast amounts of oil. It's coming in vast amounts. And why are we paying $3, $4 a gallon for gasoline when there's this volume of oil just from one well? So at any rate, then the drilling on the North Shore of Alaska would become a moot point. All of the things, the bought and paid for congressmen that are promoting this type of thing, it's just a big mess. So the BP oil spill is a big political issue. And at any rate, but then these people ask, now let's get into the heart of the issue here. They have clearly set themselves up in South Carolina, which would be a wonderful, beautiful area to be, except now it is being destroyed by acid rain. And you have to ask the question, too, was this done intentionally with the knowledge that this would destroy the southeastern United States, with the knowledge that it would stop the Gulf current that would feed the warmth Gulf current into the North Atlantic current, which cools in the summer and warms in the winter the British Islands and all of Northern Europe up to Scandinavia, which would then ruin the fishing areas, basically destroying this planet wholesale, all of these countries. And so you have to ask the question, first of all, was it done intentionally? And second of all, and more importantly, once it happened, to keep it going intentionally to destroy these areas? And our little puppet president has no knowledge of anything. He's just a little idiot, just like the previous president. These people have nothing. And by the way, you're starting to see in the news now the political dog and pony show of this person criticizing that person, and this guy criticizes Obama, and Obama's popularity is falling. This is the dog and pony show that keeps 98% of the public fooled into thinking that the next election we're really going to elect in some leaders that, say, with the education bill, next one we're going to really elect in some officials that are going to do something, and change is on the way. This is the dog and pony show that's kept the United States under the thumb of the European banking community to give the illusion that we have democracy. They're trying to move this elusive democracy thing into the Mideast right now. The people think they're going to have freedom of over there. It's just another illusion. It's all smoke and mirrors. Okay, so anyway, the final question of this email, the people ask, where could they move to? They mention two places, Colorado. They mention Indiana. They want to know if Indiana is far north enough to avoid the acid rain. And I would say, okay, let's look at rain patterns. Let's look at rain patterns. As far west as even the Dakotas, moisture can come up from the Gulf of Mexico. So Texas, if you look at the states that receive moisture from the Gulf of Mexico, where this oil spill is south of New Orleans, is pretty far east, but say a big storm that could come in there could disperse the acid rain, and that's what we're talking about, acid rain. This is the rain, the water that comes off of the Gulf area. Where does that have the potential to go? And I would say all the way as far west as Texas, and then just draw a line north. That is the area where the Gulf of Mexico water and pollutants can reach. And depending on if there's a big storm that would come into the Gulf of Mexico, it could disperse that. Okay, let's take an example. Hurricane comes in to, let's talk about next summer. Everybody has their crops planted. Hurricane comes in through the Gulf of Mexico, across the region of the oil spill, picks up all of that water into the clouds and moves westward into Texas. Then that cloud, and now we've seen these dozens of times, that cloud moves northwards and that moisture can reach all the way up into Canada. So like I say, take western Texas, draw a line north, due north. Western Texas, anybody can do this, take a map. Take western Texas, or the eastern border of New Mexico. It's the same border. And draw a line due north all the way up into Canada. Those are the areas that potentially could receive damaging acid rain from the Gulf of Mexico, given the conditions that might be correct. So, at any rate, just a second. I had a little bit of a technical problem here, so I'll keep continuing with this topic. I'm sorry, I had a little bit of a technical problem. One of the antivirus programs decided to jump in and start doing its thing, and so I had to, crazy, crazy world of computing. Okay, so back to the story. Where would you want to move to? What would I suggest? I personally don't have any suggestions. But that's the, if you want an answer to the question, where could you be affected by the acid rain? Now, regarding, say, Colorado, it's not really one of the, it's a dry state. This year they had apparently some good snowfall, some of the southwestern areas. So the question still is going to exist as to the southwestern U.S. I knew some people that moved to, to New Mexico in the high altitude, the northwestern part, the high plains. And they realized it was very cold there. They all of a sudden had a problem with the cold there. And so they thought they were moving to this nice warm climate. So in general, the U.S. mainland, you can go to places like Oregon and Washington State, but there you have the active volcano problems. There are some major volcanoes sitting up in that area of the United States. And if those go off, they could easily affect large areas of those states so that you couldn't grow crops. The world is a very strange place, and the question of where should one go, the thing is, I don't want to answer that question for people, because if people go to a place and it doesn't work out, there's dozens of reasons why moving, making a major move, is a very difficult thing to do. I know there are people that sell like safe area maps. I would beware of those. That's just people cannot predict where there's going to be a safe area. That's been something people have simply made money by selling a safe area. There's no, in my mind, there's no such thing as a safe area. There are certain areas that are pretty good. But let's take an area like the Ozark Mountains, typically very removed from the ocean, higher altitudes, but still warm enough to where you can golf all year long, which means you could have a garden all year long, but now also receiving rain from acid rain from the Gulf of Mexico. You have to understand, let me revert back to another topic. Let's talk about the destroyers, the people who are governing right now, the people who are overseeing all the problems that we have. They are called a very good name from old text, from the Bible. They are very well identified. They are called the destroyers. The destroyers. They revel in destruction. They revel in deceit. They use deceit to fool the public. These people have been around for a long time, and believe me, they know a lot more about deception than you ever will. How to control the public, how to run the government, how to run the government into the ground, how to introduce phony money, how to take over a country and all its resources, and put the people into bondage, economic bondage. The textbooks on this were written long, long thousands of years ago. So these people are experts. And they know how to fool people, and they know how to take over an education system and turn it into a bunch of phony baloney. So they know how to use science to their advantage and keep information from the public. These are not new topics to these people. They are the destroyers. They revel in destruction. And they revel in coming in and taking over a well-functioning society and destroying it. So, at any rate, the point is that they're not going to leave a stone unturned. The Patriot Act, for example, was no accident. It was something to control the public. They want everything in control of them, especially the resources that you need to exist. They want all of that in their control when the other shoe drops. So if there's, for example, a major natural catastrophe coming, they're going to have martial law in place for some other reason before it. That's why we all somewhat expect the other shoe to drop here any moment. Okay, so I'm going to jump off that topic. I think I've somewhat covered it. I don't recommend a place where people should move. But I would say look for the basics, the place where you can have your independence, be pretty much away from everything. And just remember, if there is ever a situation like martial law, you probably don't want to be in a city, because the food, the destruction, the chaos that will occur in a major city is going to be major. So you want to be in a place where it's going to be hard for other people to get to, and I'm sorry to put it that way, but that's simply the way it is. You're going to have to take care of yourself, and anything you have, you're going to have to be able to protect and maintain it. That's just the way it's going to be. You want a place where there's water. At least you have your water filter, and you can filter water and have fresh water. Whether you have a well or a river, a well would be better with sunlight, or alternative power of some type, and then your own food, your own garden, your ability to have sprouts, your own seed supply, recurring seed supply. And if you look at what I'm saying, over past years, everything that I'm talking about has come under severe control. So, okay, anyway, enough of that topic. I haven't really answered the question of where to go to, but every person has to make their own decision, but study it and try and figure out what's best for you. Okay. I'll start talking about the alternative powers problem. And, just a second. Okay, let me see. Once again, I had a little bit of a technical problem here. So, let me start again with the topic of the alternative energy and the pollution involved in creating these. Let's take a wind tower. You see the tower and you see the three big blades up there. That's the physical part of what you see. Okay, the blade itself is made by a composite process, and these are a lot of chemicals involved in making the blades. The tower itself requires a lot of, it's metal. They're very big, they're very strong, and they're a couple hundred feet of metal tubing, a process that... Now, let's take an example, something I like to quote. Let's say you made a wind tower, one wind tower, and you wanted to use the electricity of that tower to melt the metal and form the tower of all of the future wind towers that you are going to make. In other words, you are going to use green energy to make that wind tower. Of course, you couldn't do it. So the energy to make that tower has to come from non-green sources, from coal primarily, to make the electricity, to use in the fabrication shops to make those towers. So the electricity is there is coal. How much pollution does it take to simply make that tower, and how long does that wind tower have to run to produce just enough electricity to replace the electricity that was used to make it using coal. In other words, there's a process called von Neumann process. In other words, you make a product and it is used to continue to make future products. That's a very subtle concept. But in the case of wind towers, it just doesn't happen. The wind towers are being very much oversold to the governments who are okaying these projects. They're sold at maximum capacity, and they're being sold and saying that they will get over a certain amount of time a certain percentage of maximum capacity. Let's take a single wind tower, and then you can multiply that by the number of wind towers. Let's take a 3-megawatt wind tower. That's 3 megawatts of power it'll produce. And that's over the course that they talk about in terms of yearly power output. Okay, and how many houses might that power? Okay, that's a question. But what's the real efficiency of that tower? The industry says 26%, that overall, over the course of a year, it will get 26% of that 3 megawatts. Studies of existing tower systems by the power companies that have installed these say that the power output overall average is around 20%. But now it's becoming very apparent that 20% is a very high figure. I put it at around 10%, and I think in a lot of cases that might be very generous. Because how do you measure that? Let's take a wind tower. Now, I'm sure most of you can go to an area where there are wind towers near you. Go and sit and watch them sometime. And unless those blades are spinning to the point where you can hardly see them, then it is not running at 100% efficiency. They need about a 33-mile-per-hour wind. They also need power to get the blades going. These blades are big, and the wind doesn't just start the blades from turning. They need an actual motor to get the blade systems turning to the point where they actually respond to the incoming wind. So, okay, imagine a day when you have 33-mile-an-hour wind consistent all day coming from a single direction. Now, that's another issue. When you have winds, they're rarely straight-line winds, and they're rarely at 33 miles an hour. They're either faster or slower. Faster winds are not good either. They need that wind speed, and so it's very rare, extremely rare, that you get these consistent wind speeds. That's why they put wind towers out in a bay or in the ocean someplace, because they tend to get a more consistent stream of wind. But then if the wind is coming from a direction, one tower can block the wind from the next tower. So that's another question. What's the wind direction, or is the wind direction changing? Is it coming right at the wind towers? These are questions that all affect the efficiency. But I would say that in general, across the board, the percentage of efficiency of a wind tower system runs around 10% if you're lucky. So that's a very low output. Now you're talking 300,000 watts from an alleged 3-megawatt station. This is a very low power output for the expense that goes into this, not only the expense, but the level of pollution. I talked earlier about this lake in China. And let me just reference these articles. In China, okay, this is, let me see, the www.dailymail.co.uk. And this is, excuse me, article 1350811. So once again, this is out of England, Daily Mail, just like it sounds, Daily Mail, M-A-I-L, .co.uk, and then it's article 1350811, 1350811, and that's an article on, it says, in China, the true cost of Britain's clean green power experiment, pollution on a disastrous scale. And it's an article that goes into the English alternative energy movement, which has been passed into law. Let me talk about another one, which is it's called the Great Texas Wind Hoax. And this is out of a source called WordPress, WordPress.com. And it's a February 17th article. And you'll notice that came out the day after, and so did the article from China. Those came out the day after my show on Coast to Coast, talking about the myth of alternative energy. So at any rate, check those articles out. But the one on China is a startling article talking about vast areas of China that are being polluted with outbounds because of the mining of rare earth metals, some of which go into the magnets of these giant wind turbines. The situation with the listener talking about the situation in South Carolina with the garden. Imagine being a gardener in China and raising a farm near these areas and your entire livelihood. These people live much closer to the earth as a general population than we do. Most people in South Carolina still go to the grocery store, get their food. Much of it comes from outside of the country. We don't even know where our food comes from anymore, or what kind of conditions or chemicals were used, or if they're hybrid or if they're not. We have no idea where our food supply comes from. So at any rate, those are the two articles I wanted to talk about. I'm running short of time because I spent quite a bit of time on the topics, some of the topics. Let me quick mention education. The situation in education in the U.S. is terminal. Something has to be done. This show hopefully provides some education on, in my science books, teach people the true science of the workings of the solar system. I also had an article here how Time magazine recently just published an article about how dark matter is necessary. And the real reason dark matter is necessary is kind of because none of the physical theories, the theories of the standard science, make any sense. So they have to invent something as outrageous as dark matter to keep it all together. Remember to go to my website, jmccsci.com. That's seven letters, JMCC. S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. The things you need for your basic survival I have on my homepage. I don't sell a lot of things like flashlights or other things. The situation is you need clean water, you need some food, and you need information. Those are the basics. So go to my webpage, the secure web ordering page, and those are the things you need. The Mountain House freeze-dried food, the flax, the Dalton water filters, and my books with information. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.